It's bonus pod 215.
You get in a taxi and you go, take me to the stadium, please. I want to watch the big game. And the driver turns around and goes, the sports match? And you go, yeah. And they go, yeah, I hear it's a good one today. And they drive. And then the driver starts farting. And you go, can you not do that? And the driver taps at a sign above his window, above the windshield that says, and he says, read that. And you read it and it says, only rule of the taxi, don't criticize the driver for farting. And then you go, what? That's ridiculous. And then the two people hail down the driver and he stops to pick him up. You're like, whoa, what the hell's going on? And two more people get in the taxi. And you're like, well, no, I've got this taxi. And the people coming in are Phil and Pierre. And Pierre goes, we hear you try to tell this guy off for farting in his own taxi. And I say, that's not good, man. And I start punching my hand threateningly. And you go, would you even know that? And then we say, we saw it on Twitter. And then you go, you saw it on Twitter, and then you look over the driver and he's tweeting the whole thing. He's tweeting the whole interaction. He's tweeting the whole drive. And you look at your Twitter and your notifications have blown up and you've been cancelled. Welcome to Bonus Pod.
I like that one a lot.
Do you like that one? That for me was a bit rushed. I didn't really feel jovial because in the break between recording the main episode and this bonus episode, I was drinking my coffee in the bathroom and I knocked it over and I broke the mug and I smashed the mug and it was a nice mug. Yeah. And I'm really annoyed about it.
You showed me a picture.
It was a really nice mug.
It was a nice mug, nice pattern on it and stuff. And you were saying that you smashed it or you knocked it over by like flailing at it with your flipper.
Well, I was looking at my phone. I just reached out to grab the handle to have another sip of coffee. And my hand just went, just sort of a general hand shape would be fine. And so it just kind of, I just sort of knuckled it onto the ground like an ape. And then just smashed. And you know when you see something that you value fall, it falls in slow motion.
Mm.
And things never break on the first contact with the ground. They break on the second. Well, and there must be a dissertation in that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Isn't it? You think it's the first, because that's when it's at its highest velocity, but it goes, bang, and you think for a second it's going to be fine, and on the second shorter hit, that's when it breaks.
Yeah.
And I just thought, of course. I have so many mugs that I fantasize about breaking, because they're ugly, but they still function as mugs, so I can't get rid of them.
Yeah, and then if they broke, you'd be free.
I'd be free, and I'd finally be able to throw them in the bin. And this is one of my few nice mugs, and I break it. I'm just so annoyed. Why can't... beauty doesn't last, I think, is the lesson. Beauty doesn't last, and ugliness hangs around forever.
These are the kind of thoughts you have after you do a small bad thing and not a big one.
Me specifically?
One.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely you. You've got your... I think you feel minor regret more than major.
Yeah.
But I think there's some poem where a guy, the point of the poem is that you don't lose your mind when the really big stuff happens to you. You lose your mind when a few weeks later you're trying to tie your shoes and the shoelace snaps.
Yeah.
It might be Ginsberg.
Right, yeah. It's that sort of
petty bullshit that just makes you go... ah! And then just full on lose your
shit. It's a small thing that acts as an emblem for the big things, I think. And so, like, when that mug broke, I'm just like, I wasn't just furious about losing this one particular mug, but also about how the world tends towards ugliness.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It's emblematic, isn't it?
Emblematic, exactly.
Yeah. And it's insult to injury as well, if you're already stressed about something else. So, like, if you were getting divorced, you'd be like, oh, I'm getting divorced, and I don't have a shoelace. And then that will be what, like, puts you over the edge.
There's, like, there's a great bit in Hotel Rwanda, which is about the Hutu and Tutsi war.
Yeah. Rwandan genocide.
The Rwandan genocide.
Yeah.
Where the main character played by... Is it Don Cheadle? It is, isn't it?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Don Cheadle, yes. When Don Cheadle, who's the hotel manager, he's held the straight, you know, he's kept everything going. The genocide's going on while he's managing this hotel. It breaks out while he's managing this hotel, and he has to keep people safe. He has to keep himself safe, and he does it all. And he keeps his temper. He keeps his positivity, and he's very like together and effective through the whole thing. And then in a quiet moment, in a quiet sort of break he gets between the action, he puts on his tie and he looks down, and like the bit that's meant to be long is very short, and the bit that's meant to be short is very long.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh dear. And as he's redoing the tie, that's when he breaks down crying.
That's exactly it.
And that's it. All the big stuff gets focused into just a small thing.
That's fucking exactly it.
Yeah, it's a really good scene.
I don't know if you find this. I find it very hard to determine the origin point of my stress sometimes.
Yeah. Because it's probably cumulative and it adds up over time.
Yeah, I know I'm stressed, but I sort of have to sit and go, like I'm solving a crime, figure out why.
Mm.
And go, well, what happened recently? Or what am I doing... I'm doing that. Like other people seem to be able to tell why they're stressed straight away. Like there's no mystery for them. Whereas for me, I need to do some autistic problem solving is what I need to do. Film noir style. Like I'm the stress detective, the destructive.
Yeah. But I'm going to be thinking about that this whole record now. I'm going to be thinking about the ghost of this mug.
Where'd you get it from?
I think my sister got it. So we had it together in the flat. So we've had it for a while. It's had a good long life, but it's just high quality.
Is it repairable?
It's from China. It's high quality. It's maybe it's just from John Lewis, but it's like a V&A. It's a V&A. A V&A. What would you call it? Range.
Oh.
Of mugs. Huh. So it's just high quality and pretty.
Is it repairable from the smash?
I don't think it's worth repairing. I don't want to see it like that. It wouldn't be fair to the mug.
Yeah, it's not fair to bring people back.
Mug's going, kill me.
Yeah, it's not fair to bring people back from the dead, like in the Stephen King thing, where you can bring people back from the dead, but there's something wrong with them. You know, they're like
On the inscription demonic. On the inscription under the mug, next to V&A, it says, do not resuscitate. So,
Well, I'm trying to think, when was the last time, have you ever smashed something out of petty frustration?
No, I have incredible control of my anger.
Yeah, but it's because your control turns it inwards, I think, though. It's like a conservation of energy, right? Like you're controlling the explosion, but it's still like ricocheting around in this like.
But
tin.
People who smash things they're not karma for it.
No,
it's not a zero sum game.
That's true.
Yeah, so I've always been incredibly good at controlling my emotions, and I've never been. And if anything ever holds me back in this business, it'll be that I'm really unemotional. Or like I've very strong control over my emotions and I never get emotional if I don't want to.
Yeah, this business doesn't seem to like that very much.
Well, because
everyone in the arts,
when you try and,
they're a lot wetter.
Especially if you try to act. Acting is very hard for an unemotional person.
Yeah, or at least you need to be a very emotional person to act, or a sort of high-functioning sociopath. Who has spent so long imitating emotions that you're essentially acting all the time anyway.
Yeah.
Those seem to be the two best types of actor.
Yeah. I'm literally looking at three glasses right now I'd love to break. but they just hang around. They never break. Why the ugly? You never break your ugly shit. You always break your nice shit.
Maybe, there's got to be some psychological thing behind that. The sheer excitement of having a lovely thing and you just knock it. Or Was the mug quite delicate? Was it, not to turn this into fucking CSI mug, but was it quite a delicate sort of China style kind of thing?
Yeah, I guess it's quite thin. It's bone china. It's, you know, quite fine.
But I think when something's light and easy, you pick it up more recklessly than some ugly heavy Sports Direct mug.
That's true. I think that's right.
So maybe that's it.
Because it's itself is light. It inspired in me a lightness of touch.
Yeah.
Which in the end was its downfall.
Yes, your fingers got all whimsical.
It was beauty that killed the beast. Not a bunch of biplanes with machine guns.
And those are the two options. In the end, it wasn't the drugs that smashed your mug, Philip. It was the love.
Your love for the mug.
Your love, Elvis.
Well, in a way, maybe it was because I used it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, many times in my life, I've got a lovely new thing and I've gone, too precious for use for this world. And I've hidden it and then returned to a state where I have less shelf space in my flat. And functionally speaking, don't own a nice thing either because I don't use it.
Yeah. Yeah. In effect, you don't. But I mean, this was a quality of mug that, you know, I don't. Is this potentially a bit of like British observational material?
Ooh.
There are mugs you let builders use, and the mugs that you don't.
Ooh, maybe.
There are mugs you give builders that like, you know, when a builder comes over or a tradesman or something, you get him a cup of tea.
Yeah, yeah.
I would never use this mug.
Well, it's too delicate. It's delicate. It's more. It's
fancy. Delicate, and I'm not that I'm saying they're more likely to break it, but I'm saying if they break it, I won't be able to hide my upset.
Yeah, it's not about the incident. It's about how. It's about what it's
the responsibility of placing it on them.
Yes, and it's about the situation it will create.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, I think you and I are both third step along the decision tree thinkers.
Oh yeah, big time.
So we'll think about that third step on the decision tree and go, ah, I could bing, but then I bong. And what if I bang? Then I won't do bing. Whereas I think other people just go, well, if I bing, maybe I'll bong.
Yeah.
Do, and they go do it. They don't think all the way through to the end and about how their emotions will feel. And about how they'll be like, it's bad to be standing saying to an apologetic builder, it's fine.
Yeah.
Really furious with your hands on your hips, looking at the floor. It's fine. Like that. Like the least fine man in the world.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm going to have to give the thing a funeral now. I have to Marie Kondo it and throw it away and say thank you.
Are you going to light anything?
No, because knowing my luck today, I'll burn the fucking house down.
Oh, I lit one of my good candles.
That's something I'm always amazed by. Some people's like recklessness with candles. Mm. Like you turn up maybe you have a hippie friend and you turn up and the number of candles they have going and you go, how are you able to relax?
Mm. You know what I mean? My girlfriend is a candle lady. She doesn't relax around them, but she likes to have them on so much that I can't get out of my head that there's just a flame in the room.
Yeah, an open flame.
A bit of the room's on fire. I know it's under control, but it's on fire. Like something's burning.
Yeah.
There is an element of smoke. There's not smoke.
Yeah. And not only is something burning, there is an ever-present potential of a larger flame. A larger blaze.
Maybe.
All we need is one thing to one piece of paper to fly into that and then fly into something else.
Yeah. Well, I once had to move a tea light away from the TV because it was cooking the TV like a serving tray in a Chinese buffet.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, like it's changing its color.
Well, it was just heating it up a lot because it was not quite fully under the TV on its stand, but it was way too under the TV given that it was a fucking fire.
Oof.
But this is another. This is an observation that Garrett Miller, a friend of the pod, made, which is that ladies, they like to hide technology. I'm looking right, at my TV true. Right now, and there's a scent diffuser, a plastic pot plant, and a candle in the way of the TV right now.
That's true. My ex tried to, she begged me not to put the PlayStation on the on next to the TV on the sideboard.
Yeah.
She's like, you can't put it there. And I'm like, wait, it physically cannot go anywhere else. It needs access to the power and to yeah. the TV. This is what this surface is for.
It's part of the TV.
She's like, you can't put it there. But she's also quite posh. So I've had to buy two TVs, really, because the first one, she wouldn't let me buy anything big because posh people don't have big TVs.
Yeah.
Posh people have small TVs.
Like when we went...
Tiny TVs. The smaller, the posher the family, the smaller the TV.
Yeah, like when we went to that election party where that awful woman was going, "We won!" Years ago, which we talked about on the main pod.
Yeah.
That living room was so posh that, bearing in mind that, as far as I was aware, we were going over there to watch the election come in.
Yes.
And it was like a fucking cathode ray, 30 centimeter by yeah. 30 centimeter, 1 foot by 1 foot TV, half hidden by a Christmas tree in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And not mm-hmm. aimed at any furniture. All the furniture was aimed at the fireplace, like it was a Dickens novel. And then that,
yep.
with the sound off, was the TV.
Yep. Posh people like a small, old TV.
Yeah, as if to say, oh... That silly thing. We only got it to watch the coronation. Ugh. Madness.
Yeah.
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 But there's our sort of stereotyped sort of 70s spicy stand-up take of the day is that the ladies like to hide the technology and light candles. This is our stereotype ladies. Now. We're going to be
wow.
70s comedians.
Ah, is this the even spicier version? Women are more mature than men in many ways, but technologically they're Luddites.
Or the, you know what it
they,
is?
They prefer fire to a PlayStation or a TV.
Yeah.
Fire.
Or fire. A candle made of beans. Because it's all soy wax, so you don't die from the fumes. Yeah, fire. Or maybe because also they're more mature than us, and that's why they're just like ashamed of technological diversions.
Mm,
like video
why?
Games and silly movies. You know?
Yeah.
Girls generally don't like gaming stuff to be on show.
No.
Unless
no,
they are gamers.
No.
I'm talking in broad terms. I know there'll be girls listening to this who play video games, but the normies.
Also, games consoles are designed with men in mind and are given almost without fail a masculine aesthetic, except maybe the Nintendo consoles, which I think is why women are in general a lot more accepting of a Wii in or a Switch lying around.
What we
than
need
a sort of angular black PlayStation.
We need an Oliver Bonas case. Shaped like a
the
pineapple.
Gold trim around the side.
Shaped like a pineapple right. or a sort of matte pastel case.
Yeah. I'd love a mid-century games console. That would look sick.
Yeah, but if you went too far, then you're steampunk now.
Oh no.
Yeah,
ever say that about me.
Yeah, sellotaping cogs to your fucking controller.
No, how dare you stop it?
Putting goggles on your top hat. You can't do it.
Do you do anything that is steampunk coded? We'd play this game on the tour car about doing things that are coded to a community you aren't part of.
Yeah.
Right. So something I do that is steam. My most steampunk coded thing is that I have in my time absolutely loved Electro Swing.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I loved Electro Swing, and I didn't understand why people didn't love Electro Swing. And now I find Electro Swing quite embarrassing, but
yeah.
I just love Electro Swing.
It's a bit unlistenable.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of it, but it's a lot more unlistenable than when you and I were 21.
Well, in the time that has passed, it's been used in a lot of adverts, which I think is usually the end for a genre of music.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. What's my most steampunk coded thing that I do?
Oh, there must be something. There'll be loads, surely.
I think having a PC to game on is quite steampunky because it's all bits and they click together.
Well, did you build it yourself?
I selected the elements myself, and in fact, someone in a workshop built it. But I can disassemble.
Maybe your most steampunky thing is like liking guns, like a blunderbuss, having a blunderbuss lying around.
Yeah, or like a laser gun, but the laser's powered by a big light bulb.
It's a vacuum tube laser gun.
Yeah.
It's technologically advanced in a way that's impossible without transistors. It's impossible to do this with what the technology they're claiming to do it with. It's literally impossible. How is it more technologically advanced than what we have with transistors? It's impossible.
I like this a lot. You can't see listeners.
That's the one thing that annoys me as an engineer. I'm looking at, like, it's impossible. You're saying this is more advanced than what we have, and you're doing with vacuum tubes. Vacuum tubes, really. The number of vacuum tubes you have to stack up to make up what a square micrometer of just transistors.
Yeah. It was so funny to me. You guys couldn't see, but Phil had like screwed his face up all tight and was going, transistors. Exactly. Yeah. And they just go, no, it's just one vacuum tube, and it's like a sort of nuclear weapon. Yeah, that's another problem with steampunk, which is its love of technology aesthetically, but its total ignorance of it in what it wants to achieve. There's only so far steam and zeppelins can get you. You know, that's my motto.
Yeah.
Speaking of punks, should we do some correspondence from one of our punks?
Yes, let's listen to these.
Our VIP
punks blow off some steam.
Nice. Very, very nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
So it's a long old message from, and there is some sort of pseudonym at the end. So it's Kenny and Toddy.
Kenny and Toddy.
Yeah, it's not really Kenny and Toddy, but that's how they've requested to be known.
Okay.
Dearest Pipi e Popo.
Pipi e Popo. That sounds like cacio e pepe, which is that pepper pasta.
He says, if you're too young to have proper memories of watching Eurotrash for lack of anything good to wank to, they were the silly giraffes. Oh, yeah. Pipi and Popo.
Oh, right. What was Eurotrash?
It was a sort of semi-nude, late-night, silly comedy prank show.
Right.
I remember there being a piece about some old artist, like a really, like, fat old French guy with a big grey beard who painted all these nudes and was, like, running, or, like, part of his art was running around carrying really, like, sexy nude young women around on his shoulders. And I remember watching that and thinking, God, in France, if you're just an old man who does something artistic, this is just the sort of thing that they expect from you. And I don't think, even though Eurotrash was not supposed to be an accurate show, I think that take from it was accurate. In France.
It's mad the stuff that used to be on TV. I guess without the release valve of the internet, it had to go onto something.
But, yeah.
But if you were to chart sort of the, what would you call it?
Evolution of wanking.
If you were to chart the sexual content of TV, or the adult content of TV over the last couple of decades, I think you'd find that we're now more puritanical, almost.
Yeah, I think it's, they're right, the release valve. People are like, well, just put it on the internet, if that's what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Whatever the pseudonym was, continues. I'm a founding father according to Patreon, but I've only been listening since September 2022. Directly after listening to Pierre's Rahulastipa, I've been chugging through your effluvial output at a rate which would have physicians in paroxysms of despair.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Great. A lovely bit of podcast cross-pollination.
Yeah. For the records, I caught up around February. That's nearly 5 months of walking routine, walking the dog, morning routine, and work breaks, therefore all shitting, pissing, and sometimes shitting.
Sometimes the dog shitting.
Yeah. I'm now halfway through a more leisurely re-listen with my partner, as she also catches up on her pistory before we come to see both of your gigs in Dublin this year. Oh, maybe these are the podbuds we met.
Oh, sick. Yeah, because we met some podbuds in Dublin at the Dublin show.
We did. Oh, interesting.
Oh, excellent.
I thought I got through the back passage catalogue quickly, but I've been beaten by a couple of other historians who obviously have more listening time than me, to the point where I was falling behind in the other podcasts to which I'm faithful. I have become obsessed. Very good. Good. That's what I like.
For it's the what Bud we Pod like census, to hear.
We have a whole family of Pod Buds here. I'm Scottish/Italian living in Ireland. My partner is Chinese-Malaysian, born in Ireland, but spent all her childhood summers in Malacca.
Ah, I've never been to Malacca.
Yeah.
It's a very historically interesting, the only Portuguese part of Malaysia.
Ooh, is that the big Christian part with the big Jesus statue?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. Someone's knocking on my door, if you excuse me.
Okay. One moment, I'll keep it running. Okay.
It's a shitload of juice.
Load of juice.
Yeah, I'm doing a corporate for a juice company.
Oh, sick. Got a bunch of juice.
And I'm not going to mention them until they sponsor Bud Pod.
Man, Malacca was under Portuguese control for 130 years.
Yeah.
You always think about these times and you go, oh, they had it for, what, 20, 25 years? And you're watching, you find out and it's like, oh, it would be my whole lifetime plus plus.
Oh, yeah.
I would live my entire full life under Portuguese rule. It's
if it stopped when you were 18, it would be your parents, grandparents, and great grandparents' memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Insane. Gosh. Anyway. He says, my son also gets to listen along sometimes, but he was born here in Ireland and his mum is French. Anyway, so then there's a big chunk of redacted praise, which is very nice to read. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
He says, you may not remember, but you had a short discussion about drag queen names.
Mm.
Phil had already picked Emma Tsuji.
Emma Tsuji. Emma Tsuji.
Emma Tsuji. Emma Tsuji. And you were both pitching...
Oh, Emma. Yeah, Emma Tsuji. Emma Tsuji. First name's Emma. Emma Tsuji.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were both pitching Pierre's with references to South Africa, e.g. Johannesburg and Iona Gunn. And that's fair enough, but in my opinion, Pierre's drag name simply has to be Isla Man.
Isla Man!
Of course!
Really good.
Yeah. And it has man in a kind of ironic way, so that's fun.
That's fun. Isla Man. That's really good.
And then he says, particularly for their attitudes towards queerness there, which is not true, Mr. Pseudonym. Everyone likes, the only piece of trivia they have on the Isle of Man, that people who know about this, is that in the Isle of Man, if you did some sodomy, you got hit with a stick, according to the law, up until the 90s. They didn't actually do it, but it was on the law books until the 90s. And everyone thinks that that's still the case, whereas it's not.
Oh, but it was the case until the 90s.
Yeah, but the Isle of Man went through what you might call a rapid period of modernization in the 90s. Not just thanks to society changing, but also thanks to lots and lots of foreigners like me arriving.
Right, yeah.
So, no longer the case, but people like to be a bit smug about it, so. I mean, there's still plenty of nutters on there, but no more than, I mean, certainly not any more than there are in Ireland.
No.
Anyway.
I suppose not.
With regards to the classic Bud Poo episode that started it all, when my partner heard Phil's story, she was immediately confused as to why Phil didn't just put the specimen collecting mat on the floor and do a good old Asian squat poo.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I guess there's a lot, there's a great cost to missing there, whereas there's not much cost, you know, if you can't miss in a bowl, in a toilet bowl.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where it goes. But that is a good point. I probably didn't have my Chinese squat down as much as I do now back then.
Yeah. And you were panicking.
I was panicking.
You were panicking.
I was panicking.
Poo panic. Yeah. He says it's played on his mind because I hadn't thought of that either, and I should have, because like Phil, I got very accomplished at detaining my shit to prevent it corrupting my playtime as a child.
Yes.
He says,
I'll hold on to it for hours.
He says this resulted in constipation when I was around 6 or 7, which necessitated the booking of 3 enemas.
Whoa.
Now that's anal retentive, Mr. Freud, Dr. Freud.
Oh, wow.
Luckily, I only needed to have 2 of them in the end, but unluckily for us, neither of them were eventful enough to be correspondence worthy. That's pretty eventful. I only mention it because prior to the enemas, I also had to provide a sample. Fortunately, my mum was there, and as a nurse was wise enough to advise me to just lay the mat down and hunker over it. Yes, so I had an easier time of it than Phil, But helpful as Mum was, the unpleasant task was all mine, so I too have the same disturbing memories of kneeling on the bathroom floor and using a yellow medical sample lid spoon to dig up my own intensely compacted excrement.
Oof, fuck me. No thanks.
I have to ask now that I'm writing in, because I have a science background and can imagine this happening to myself, was it just an engineer's dutiful execution of written instructions that blocked Phil from doing that way?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm very trusting of instructions. I assume every sort of codified process has been checked and approved of and improved on, and if there were a better method, and then it would be used instead. I have a lot of this is it comes down to my overtrust of authority.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I respect that. I respect anyone who respects the instructions, because I haven't always, and I've come a cropper.
Well, this is it. Yeah. If you go follow the instructions and it goes wrong, that's not your fault. If you don't follow the instructions and it goes wrong, then it is your fault.
Blame and shame.
Right? That's it. Play the blame game.
The guy says he has a tale of poopiness, but it's a long one, and he'll save it for another day.
he used to as a kid.
Yeah. He does have a poopy thing to share. His son was born with a condition known as prune belly syndrome.
Oof. I don't even know what that is. I don't like the sound of it.
Which means that his ureters, the tubes connecting the kidneys to the bladder, have got weakened peristaltic muscles.
Oh, yeah. Resulting in peristalsis is the motion of just squeezing something through the, through the tube.
Resulting in him being unable to pee normally, which backs up the kidneys. He has spent a big chunk of the first few years of his life in hospital and has had some serious surgeries as a tiny, slightly premature baby. Damn, man. Oof. Shout out to Crumlin Children's Hospital Dublin. They deserve more praise than can ever be given and redacted. Wow, man, that's tough. My sympathies. The condition comes in varying degrees of severity, with kidney transplants and lifelong dialysis on the serious end. Thankfully, my son is on the mild end and has managed so far with a few surgeries, including a procedure called a Mitrofanov loop, in which they've rejiggered his plumbing to reroute the urine through his appendix. Whoa.
What? Eh? Through the appendix?
And here's the elegant bit. Then they've yanked his appendix round from his side to the front so it aligns with his navel, and they put the stoma in the belly button so they don't have to cut another orifice in his side. That's incredible. That's so cool.
That's good work.
So now he has to empty his bladder every few hours by means of simply popping a catheter in his belly button to drain his bladder.
Right.
And then he sleeps with a bag connected in the night to collect all the pee. Oh, wow. That's so cool. Nevertheless, there have, of course, been accidents, damp mattresses and so on. Unfortunately, I can't think of any times where this has been funny, even in retrospect. I'm sure. But I thought you and the Podbuds would appreciate learning about yet another example of life finding a way to piss all over itself.
Well, I don't think I've heard of a urine stoma before.
No.
So that is a first.
I've heard of robot bladder sphincters.
Oh.
You press a button or something and it's like, and it tightens.
Oh.
So if you're incontinent for whatever reason, you know. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
So you could do anything, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's asking us for a favor.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite an eccentric favor. He says, I request a favor, a Bud Pod boon. I won't hold that against you if you don't want to do it. My son is starting secondary school in the summer. He's lived this condition his whole life. Oh, okay, so he's about 13. He's taken it like a trooper. Everyone's been totally sound about it, but we know what teenagers are like. I'm not panicking. I've been a teacher, and I know he'll be fine. But I've spotted an opportunity here where you get some content for your pod, and my son gets some professional comedy advice of a sort. I invite you to simulate or preempt the insults and mockery he think he might face at the hands of the monsters. But I think it would be better if we gave him some comebacks.
Oh, right.
So, like, he's asking for us to guess the kind of things that people are going to say to him. Whereas I think we can just think of some comebacks. All-purpose comebacks. You know? I mean, what would they say? God. Like,
pee bag. P-bag?
Yeah, hey, P-bag, you piss in a bag. I mean, they won't be very complex. These guys are not Shakespearean wits.
Yeah.
Why do you piss in a bag? Because your mum's cunt wasn't available.
Yeah, that's something along those lines.
It's teenage boys. Brutality is rewarded above elegance. At least
yeah,
until sixth
yeah,
form.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you pee in a bag? Because
my dick's just for fucking.
Yeah, that's good. That's fucking good. Why do you pee
my
in
dick's
a bag?
Just for fucking your mum.
Yeah. Why did you pee in a bag? I used to pee in a jar, but your mum hates recycling it after she's drunk it.
Yeah, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Variations on a theme.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Why do you pee in a bag so your dad could put it in the fridge? Anything like that.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, now they might, maybe a more sophisticated one he might get is yellow belly.
Yellow belly. You're a yellow bellied coward.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then I think that's.
But I'm not scared of fucking your mum. And again,
yeah,
you just have
you
to,
can always yeah. all roads
all roads lead to Rome.
All roads lead to Rome, and in Rome, I'm gonna fuck your mum on the holiday we've booked on the city break to Rome, because your dad doesn't do enough for her.
So hopefully those help.
Yeah, I think that's going to be pretty much just that, really. And in a sense, yeah. He should be like, well, you better watch out for me because I can fucking...
Leave a bag of pee anywhere.
Yeah, I can harvest at any time.
Yeah, I can leave a little wee whoopee cushion.
I've got
a weepy cushion on DLC.
I've got a loaded gun here.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, absolutely. So I reckon that's the best thing to do.
Mm. But best of luck to him.
So best of luck. Then the rest is some line. It's very long. I'm sorry, we don't have time to go through all of it. He's got some upsides to it. He won't have to go to the loo as much when he's drinking in the pub.
That's true.
That's great.
You don't have to get up to pee in the middle of the night. That's great.
Yes, absolutely. Oh man, yeah.
I'd love that.
Yes, that's it. Oh, okay, yeah, he's got some stuff in theory. Kind of partner, going to come see you guys in Dublin this year. We'll give you some discreet kojis. So instead of koji, he says, please, for the sake of all mankind, continue to rhythmically stroke the throbbing, turgid shafts of it. It's very erotic, this bit. He's written. It's very vivid and horrid. And it's pseudonymously from Kenny and Toddy. So thank you, Kenny and Toddy. Koji,
thank you,
and
Kenny and Toddy.
For all the praise.
Whoever you are.
Whoever you are out there. Hopefully our pre-salts have helped you out, our comebacks.
Pre-salts, yeah.
But thanks for listening, guys, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week. Thanks for being Patreons. Love you a lot. Bye.
Bye.